Welcome back to Story Time with David and Mommy. We are having lunch and reading Chapter 4 of Kidnapped.
And Chapter 4 of Kidnapped.
And Chapter 4. Are you reading Chapter 4 of Kidnapped and Chapter 4 of Kidnapped?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Also read Chapter 4 before.
Okay. Chapter this one is called... I Run a Great Danger in the House of Shaws. This is Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson. For a day that was begun so ill, the day passed fairly well. We had the porridge cold again at noon and hot porridge at night. Porridge and small beer was my uncle's diet. He spoke but little, and that in the same way as before, shooting a question at me after a long silence, and when I sought to lead him and talk about my future, slipped out of it again. In a room next door to the kitchen, where he suffered me to go, I found a great number of books, both Latin and English, in which I took great pleasure all the afternoon. Indeed, the time passed so lightly in this good company that I began to be almost reconciled to my residence at the Shaws, and nothing but the sight of my uncle and his eyes playing hide-and-seek with mine revived the force of my distrust. One thing I discovered which put me in some doubt. This was the entry on a flyleaf of a chapbook, one of Patrick Walker's, plainly written by my father's hands, and thus conceived, to my brother Ebenezer on his 5th birthday. Now what puzzled me was this, that my father was of course the younger brother. He must either have made some strange error, or he must have written, before he was yet 5, an excellent, clear, manly hand of writing. I tried to get this out of my head, but though I took down many interesting authors, old and new, history and poetry, and storybook, this notion of my father's hand of writing stuck to me, and when at length I went back into the kitchen and sat down once more to porridge and small beer, the first thing I said to my Uncle Ebenezer was to ask him if my father had not been very quick at his book.
"Alexander, now him," was the reply. "I was far quicker myself. I was a clever chappie when I was young. Why, I could read as soon as he could."
This puzzled me yet more, and a thought coming into my head, I asked if he and my father had been twins. He jumped upon his stool, and a horn spoon fell out of his hand upon the floor.
"What cause ye ask that?"
he asked, and he caught me by the breast of the jacket and looked this time straight into my eyes. His own were little and light, and bright like a bird's, blinking and winking strangely. "What do you mean?" I asked very calmly, for I was far stronger than he, and not easily frightened. "Take your hand from my jacket. This is no way to behave." My uncle seemed to make a great effort upon himself.
"Dod, man, David," he said, "you shouldn't speak to me about your father. That's where the mistake is."
He sat a while and shook, blinking in his plate.
"Mistake? He was all the brother that I ever had," he added, but with no heart in his voice.
And then he caught up his spoon and fell to supper again, but still shaking. Now this last passage, this laying of hands upon my person and sudden profession of love for my dead father, went so clean beyond my comprehension that it put me into both fear and hope. On the one hand, I began to think my uncle was perhaps insane and might be dangerous. On the other, there came up into my mind, quite unbidden by me and even discouraged, a story like some ballad I had heard folk singing, of a poor lad that was the rightful heir and a wicked kinsman that had tried to keep him from his own. For why should my uncle play a part with a relative that came, almost beggar, to his door, unless in his heart he had some cause to fear him? With this notion, all unacknowledged, but nevertheless getting firmly settled in my head, I now began to intimate his covert looks, so that we sat at the table like a cat and mouse, each stealthily observing each other. Not another word had he to say to me.
Who's the mouse?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
I think the cat is the uncle.
Yeah? You think David's the mouse? Could be.
Mouses are easily scared, though.
Mice, yeah. With this notion, all unacknowledged, but nevertheless getting firmly settled in my head, I began to intimate his covert looks, so that we sat at the table like a cat and a mouse, each stealthily observing each other. Not another word had he to say to me, black or white, but was busy turning something secretly over in his mind. And the longer we sat there, the more I looked at him, and the more certain I became that something was unfriendly to myself. When he had cleared the platter, he got out a single pipe full of tobacco, just as in the morning, turned round a stool into the chimney corner, and sat a while smoking, with his back to me.
"Davy," he said at length, "I've been thinking."
Then he paused and said it again.
"There's a wee bit siller than I have promised ye before ye were born," he continued. "Promised it to your father. Nothing legal, ye understand. Just gentlemen daffing at their wine. Well, I kept it that bit of money separate. It was a great expense, but a promise is a promise, and it has grown by now to be a matter of just precisely, just exactly," and here he paused and stumbled, "just exactly 40 pounds.
And at last he rapped out with a sidelong glance over his shoulder, and the next moment, almost with a scream, "Scots!" The pound Scots being the same thing as an English shilling, the difference made by this second thought was considerable. I could see, besides, that the whole story was a lie, invented with some end which it puzzled me to guess. And I made no attempt to conceal the tone of raillery in which I answered. "Oh, think again, sir. Pounds sterling, I believe."
"That's what I said," returned my uncle. "Pounds sterling, and if you'll step out to the door a minute, just you see what kind of night it is, and I'll get out to ye and call ye in again."
I did his will, smiling to myself in my contempt that he should think I was so easily to be deceived. It was a dark night, with a few stars low down, and as I stood just outside of the door, I heard a hollow moaning of wind far off among the hills. I said to myself that there was something thundery and changeful about the weather, and knew of what vast importance that should prove to me before the evening passed. When I was called in again, my uncle counted out into my hand 37 golden guinea pieces. The rest was in his hand, in small gold and silver, but his heart failed him there, and he crammed the change into his pocket.
"There," he said, "that'll show ya. I'm a queer man and strange with strangers, but my word is my bond, and there's proof of it."
Now my uncle seemed so miserly that I was struck dumb by this sudden generosity, and I could find no words to thank him.
"No word," he said. "Nay thanks, I want nay thanks. I do my duty. I'm not saying that everybody would have done it, but for my part, though I'm careful body too, it's a pleasure for me to do right by my brother's son, and it's a pleasure for me to think that now we'll agree as such near friends should."
I think he's up to something.
I think the pirates are on the roof.
Think so?
Yeah.
I spoke him in return as handsomely as I was able, but all the while I was wondering what would come next, and why he had parted with his precious guineas. For as to the reason he had given, a baby would have refused it. And presently he's saying that, you know, he was so suspicious that even a baby would have suspected something and would have not taken it. Presently he looked towards me sideways.
"And see here," says he, "tit for tat."
I told him I was ready to prove my gratitude in any reasonable degree, and then waited, looking for some monstrous demand. And yet, when at last he plucked up the courage to speak, it was only to tell me, very properly as I thought, that he was growing old and a little broken, and that he would expect me to help him with the house and the bit garden. I answered and expressed my readiness to serve.
"Well," he said, "let's begin."
He pulled out of his pocket a rusty key.
"There," says he, "there's the key of the stair tower at the far end of the house. You can only win into it from the outside, for that part of the house is not finished. Gang ye in there and up the stairs and bring me down the chest that's at the top. There's papers in it," he added.
"I don't think so. I think
it's a trick."
"Yeah, I think there's some kind of contraption that if you pull the handle, it opens a box, which the pirates, which has a shield under it, ooh, and the pirates are under the shield.
Can I have a light, sir? Said I.
Nay, he said very cunningly. Nay lights in my house.
No light in my house.
Very well, sir, said I. Are the stairs good?
They're grand, said he. And then as I was going, keep to the wall, he added. There's no banisters, but the stairs are grand underfoot.
Out I went into the night. The wind was still moaning in the distance, though never a breath of it came near the house of Shaw's. It had fallen blacker than ever, and I was glad to feel along the wall till I came to the length of the stair-tower door at the far end of the unfinished wing. I had got the key into the keyhole and had just turned it, when all upon a sudden, without the sound of wind or thunder, the whole sky lighted up with a wild fire and then went black again. I had to put my hand over my eyes to get back the color of the darkness, and indeed I was already half blinded when I stepped into the tower. It was so dark inside, it seemed a body could scarce breathe, but I pushed out with a foot and a hand and presently struck the wall with one and the lowermost round of the stair with the other. The wall by the touch was of a fine hewn stone. The steps, too, though somewhat steep and narrow, were of polished mason work, and regular and solid underfoot. Minding my uncle's words about the banisters, I kept close to the tower side, and felt my way in the pitch darkness with a beating heart. The house of Shaw's stood some 5 stories high, not counting lofts.
I think it's used to the night. I am. Yeah. I can see the dark.
Really?
Yeah, I can actually see in the dark.
I would not do this in the dark. Like, it sounds very dangerous.
I can see in the dark, and I would bring a flashlight.
That'd be smart. Yeah, or a candle. Something so you could see. As I advanced, it seemed to me the stair grew airier, and a thought more lightsome, and I was wondering what might be the cause of this change, when a second blink of the summer lightning came and went. If I did not cry out, it was because fear had me by the throat, and if I did not fall, it was more by heaven's mercy than my own strength. It was not only that the flash shone and on every side through the breaches in the wall, so that I seemed to be clambering aloft upon an open scaffold, but the same passing brightness showed me the steps were of unequal length, and that one of my feet rested at that moment within 2 inches of the well. This was a grand stair, I thought, and with that thought a gust of a kind of angry courage came into my heart. My uncle had sent me here, certainly to run great risks, perhaps to die. I swore that I would settle that, perhaps, if I should break my neck for it. Got me down upon my hands and knees, and slowly as a snail, feeling before me every inch and testing the solidity of every stone, I continued to ascend the stair. The darkness, by contrast with the flash, appeared to have redoubled. Nor was that all, for my ears were now troubled, and my mind confounded by a great stir of bats in the top part of the tower, and the foul beasts, flying downwards, sometimes beat about my face and body.
What is beat mean?
It means, they would slam into him. So they would fly and they would wham into him by accident.
But aren't bats nocturnal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is at night when he's doing this.
Then the bat should have seen him.
You're right. Yeah, they should. They probably wouldn't have banged into him. But that's just what happened in the story. The tower, I should have said, was square, and in every corner the step was made of a great stone of a different shape to join the flights. Well, I had come close to one of these turns, when feeling forward as usual, my hand slipped upon an edge and found nothing but emptiness beyond it. The stair had been carried no higher. To set a stranger mounting at it in the darkness was to send him straight to his death. And, you got a goldfish in your shoulder. There you go. To set a stranger mounting it in the darkness was to send him straight to his death, and although thanks to the lightning and my own precautions I was safe enough, the mere thought of the peril in which I might have stood and the dreadful height I might have fallen from brought out the sweat upon my body and relaxed my joints. But I knew what I wanted now, and I turned and groped my way down again with a wonderful anger in my heart. About halfway down, the wind sprang up in a clap and shook the tower and died again. The rain followed, and before I had reached the ground level, it fell in buckets. I put out my head into the storm and looked along towards the kitchen. The door, which had been shut behind me when I left, now stood open, and the shed a little glimmer of light, and I thought I could see a figure standing in the rain, quite still, like a man. Hearkening means listening. And then there came a blinding flash which showed me my uncle plainly, just where I had fancied him to stand, hard upon the heels of it, a great tow-row of thunder. Now my uncle thought the crash to be the sound, whether my uncle thought the crash to be the sound of my fall, or whether he heard in it God's voice denouncing murder, I will leave you to guess. Certain it is, at least, that he was seized on it by a kind of panic fear that he ran into the house and left the door open behind him. I followed as softly as I could, coming unheard into the kitchen, and stood and watched him. He had found time to open the corner cupboard and bring out a great case bottle of aqua vitae, and now sat with his back towards me at the table.
Mom?
Mm-hmm?
I only think that half in that house is porridge and beer. Everything is porridge and beer.
And then aqua vitae, which means water of life. I think it's a kind of liquor. A kind of alcohol. Ever and again he would be seized with a fit of deadly shuddering and groan aloud, and carrying the bottle to his lips, drink down the raw spirits by the mouthful. I stepped forward, came close behind him where he sat, and suddenly clapping my two hands down upon his shoulders, "Ha!" I cried. My uncle gave a kind of broken cry like a sheep's bleat, flung up his arms, and tumbled to the floor like a dead man. I was somewhat shocked at this, but I had myself to look to first of all, and I did not hesitate to let him lie as he had fallen. The keys were hanging in the cupboard, and it was my design to furnish myself with arms before my uncle should come to his senses and the power of devising evil. In the cupboard were a few bottles, and apparently some medicine, a great many bills and other papers which I should willingly enough have rummaged had I had the time, and a few of the necessaries that were nothing to my purpose. Thence I turned to the chests. The first was full of meal, the second of money bags and papers tied into sheaves.
I think that was the one he was talking about.
The third, with many other things, and these for the most part clothes, I found a rusty, ugly-looking Highland drink without the scabbard. Highland dirk, which is a type of a sword or a knife, without the scabbard.
What's a scabbard?
That is the sheath for the knife. That's what you carry it around in, the protective cover.
So he chopped it open and then drew it into trash?
Well, he found a knife. Yeah, he opened all of the chests that were in the room, and in the last one he found a knife. And I concealed inside my waistcoat and turned to my uncle. He lay as he had fallen, all huddled, with one knee up and one arm sprawling abroad. His face had a strange color of blue, and he seemed to have ceased breathing. Fear came on me that he was dead, and I got water and dashed on his face, and with that he seemed to come a little to himself. Working his mouth and fluttering his eyelids, at last he looked up at me and saw, and there came into his eyes a terror that was not of this world. "Come, come," said I, "sit up."
"Are ye alive?" he sobbed. "Oh, man, are ye alive?"
"That I am," said I, "small thanks to you." He had begun to seek for his breath with deep sighs.
"The blue phial," he said, "in the armory. The blue phial."
His breath came slower still. I ran to the cupboard, and sure enough, I found there a blue vial of medicine, with the dose written on it in paper, and this I administered to him with what speed I might.
"It's the trouble," he said, reviving a little. "I have trouble, Davy. It's the heart."
The heart.
What?
The heart. I set him on a chair and looked at him. It was true that I felt some pity for the man that looked so sick, but I was full besides of righteous anger, and I numbered over before him the points on which I wanted explanation. Why he lied to me at every word, why he feared that I should leave him, why he disliked to be hinted that he and my father were twins. "Is it that because it's true?" I asked. Why he had given me money to which I was convinced I had no claim, and last of all, why he had tried to kill me. He heard me through all inside. Yeah, he tried to kill David.
How?
He sent him to that tower in the middle of the night, and the stairs weren't finished, and he told him to go all the way up to the top and bring down a chest. But there was no top, because the stairs just weren't finished. So he was trying to kill him. He wanted him to go up in the dark and then fall off the stairs and die. It was pretty evil.
There's not a top of the stairs?
No, there wasn't a top of the stairs. It was a tower that wasn't finished. You know how, like, when we build a Lego stairway and it doesn't attach to anything at the top? It just ends. So it's like Davy was going up that stairway and he couldn't see. So his uncle was expecting him to get to the top and just step off into nothing and fall down.
But what if I support it with a ladder?
Well, that would be safer. Still dangerous to do in the middle of the night, though, without a light.
But I would give him a light. I would give him a microphone that would be used as a light.
A microphone? A microphone light?
I'll tell you in the morn, he said. I'll sure as death I will.
And so weak was he that I could do nothing but consent. I locked him into his room, however, and pocketed the key. Then, returning to the kitchen, made up such a blaze as had not shone there for many a long year. Wrapping myself in my plaid, I lay down upon the chests and fell asleep.
I bet that's a comfy bed.
Yeah, probably than what he had before. All right, that's the end of chapter 4. The next is chapter 5, I Go to the Queen's Fairy. All right, we're going to stop there for today. Say bye, podcast listeners.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.